Welcome to another Monday Pro Volleyball Wrap-Up. My name is Dan, and this week we're going to take you to Italy, Poland, Russia, and Brazil, and wherever else we might end up and talk a bit about the news and the games that happened in the world of pro volleyball over the weekend. So if you're new to 5-1 Volleyball, welcome. I post most of my content on 5-1vb.com. Check out my YouTube channel, 5-1 Volleyball. Hopefully have a good video coming out this week. And of course, do this podcast. Today we're going to go recapping the biggest stories from the weekend. So why don't we start in Italy? Of course, the big show matchup for the weekend was a rematch of this week's last week's Champions League game in Pool B, which was between Lube Civitanova and Modena. And it was probably one of the most lopsided matches I have watched this year in the entire Italian league. Lube Civitanova won at 3-0, 25-17, 25-14, 25-19 for an overall set score of 75-50. And there was not even one point during the match where it was even a little bit exciting. Granted, I know Modena is missing Micah Christensen. He's, in my opinion, the best setter in the world. So going from him to Wessel Kiemink, Kiemink's not bad, but you know, the idea for him being on the team was not to play a big role. But other than Micah right now, they don't really have anyone else injured. So for them to get absolutely clocked this thoroughly by Lube Civitanova, who's had their own struggles this season, it's not a good look for Modena's season. Zaitsev struggled again in this game, only hitting 8-21, getting blocked 3 times, which is something we're seeing a lot from him recently that hasn't really been an issue too much for him in the past. He's really not doing a good job of avoiding the block. So we got to see Velasco was kind of touring around with a few different lineups here, but we got to see Julio Pinali, which is probably the only thing to look forward to for Modena for the rest of the season. Usually plays right side, subbing in for Zaitsev, but today played left side, got 5 passing opportunities and made the most of it. And, you know, he wasn't in the game for a long time or anything, but I think he's a player to look forward to if you're a fan of Modena or Italy, because he'll likely be on the Italian national team, only being born in 1997, so still pretty young. But the Modena offense was not clicking at all. I mean, it is tough going from Micah Christensen to Wessel Kiemink, but you know, the team only hit 44% as a group. The middles weren't really being ran. Zaitsev only hit 8-21. Bed Norris, who's usually great, was 6-14 with 2 errors and 2 aces. They allowed Lube to get 11 blocks in a 3-set blowout, which is a pretty high number for given that it was a very short game. One of the best rotations for them was when Sokolov, Chester, and Liao were all blocking in the front row together, and they were just, you know, going from side to side, getting up a huge triple block on Modena. And I think they were responsible for at least half of those blocks, if not more. It was just those three playing front row together. This is a really good sign for Lube. Bad sign for the rest of the team that they're clicking this much. They hit 63% in this game, which is an extremely high number. You rarely see anything higher than 60. Sokolov 8-10, Juan Terena 10-17. Yuandri Leo was the only one who really struggled at all, hitting 12-23 with 3 getting blocked 3 times, but even that's not really that bad. So well done to Lube. They're really starting to figure out, as we saw from the wins in the Champions League recently and wins against Modena, they're going to be a dangerous team. And the rumor to be getting some reinforcements for next season too, with Matej Biniak, the Polish middle, most famously known for his hybrid serve that he tosses with 2 hands, really deadly. Currently plays for the 17-1 Zaxa Kedzierzyn Koźle in the Polish league. Apparently, according to some semi-substantiated rumors, will be joining Lube Civitanova next year. Lube Civitanova already looking ahead, despite already having Dragan Stankovic, Robert Landy, Simon, and Enrico Chester. So Biniak's a great player and all, but you know, the most obvious issue, just looking at the roster right now, is that they currently have 4 pretty high-tier foreign players in Osmani Wantarena, Robert Landy Simon, Bruno, and Yoandri Leo. So, you know, in the Italian league, you can only have 4 foreign players, and then you have to have 3 players who are Italian citizens. So it'll be interesting to see which player of those 4, all 4 fantastic players, is going to leave the team next year to make room for Biniak, if this rumor does in fact happen. For me, it seems like Leal and Simon have fit a bit awkwardly within this team. They haven't really got a great connection going with Bruno, but of course, both are still among the best players in the world at their positions, and they've been playing together for quite a while. They were teammates on Santa Cruzeiro and then moved to Lube Chieftainova together. So it'll be interesting to see if, from the players' perspective, you know, there's a couple of the players, they're pretty rare in volleyball, that actually have kind of some agency over their ultimate destination. So, you know, I'm looking forward to see what the construction of Lube's roster will be next season. Whatever it is, I'm sure it'll be extremely strong. They added a lot of firepower this summer. The only real poor decision they made, of course, losing Grebennikov has hurt them a lot, and also downgrading from Michael Christensen to Bruno, while not a huge downgrade, has certainly affected their standings and game a bit. Some other interesting games this week: Milano and Siena played on Saturday, and hey, Milano's looking real good right now. Steven Marr is playing really well. Trevor Cleveno has won yet another MVP. He's going to be among the leaders. I think he's second place after Wilfredo Leon now. So, you know, obviously Leon's going to win the MVP this season, but Cleveno, who would have thought, except for me, of course, that he would be getting close to catching him. So this game had a couple interesting implications for the standings. Milano is now tied with Modena in points, and you know, they both have pretty tough schedules to finish out the season, but Modena without Michael Christensen is not looking great, and they could really lose to almost anyone. So there's a good chance that Milano will finish in fourth place and Modena in fifth place, which rarely happens that a big four team in the Italian Super League finishes outside the top four. So that will definitely be exciting for fans of Milano to watch, and I'm sure their president is very happy too. But that doesn't matter if Michael Christensen comes back for that first round playoff series, which by all accounts, it seems like he's only out for about 30 to 40 days. So he should be back for that playoff series. And when he's back at Modena, completely different team and still probably better roster than Milano. As good as Milano's played this year, even though I think Milano has an advantage on the outsides, with Christensen in the mix, I think Modena will be too much for them to handle. But either way, that'll be by far the most interesting first round matchup to look forward to in the playoffs. And there's not that much time left. We've only got, I believe, five rounds of play left until those playoffs start. And for Siena, this was a pretty bad loss. They would have liked to come out with at least one point. Every point really matters to them right now, because there are two teams that are going to get relegated this year. Of course, one is going to be the winless Castellana Grotte. I didn't think the roster was going to be this bad. It looks kind of okay on paper, but you know, Renan Budiati recently left the team because he wasn't getting paid. Seems to be a lot of internal turmoil there within the organization and between the coaching staff, players, and general manager. But Siena is going to be battling with Sora to avoid relegation. They have five games to make up 5 points. They're currently at 13. Sora is at 18 points. Here are the remaining schedules. Siena has Lube, Grotte, Modena, Monza, and Ravenna. So three out of those five are playoff teams, and playoff teams, I guess not Modena, but Lube and Monza are playing very well right now. Grotte should be an automatic win, but it's Siena, so you never know. And Ravenna, not a playoff team, but definitely not a pushover. They've been kind of in and out of the playoff mix all season, so they're a tough opponent, of course, with Camilo Ricciolecchi. And then Sora has Ravenna, Valencia, Latina, Perugia, and Grotte on their schedule. And out of those, only Perugia, like, oh, that's a schedule loss, of course. But the other four are non-playoff teams, and Grotte at the end is pretty much, even for Sora, I think is pretty much an auto win. So we could easily see Siena get relegated after one season competing in the first Italian league, which is unfortunate. I think they clearly spent a decent amount of money on the roster, getting Maruf, getting Ishikawa, you know, paying for Vandevoort to try and bolster their chances halfway through the season, Yuri Gladier. Like, these are not, like, the cheapest players ever. Their roster, I think, is pretty decent. Maybe it wasn't constructed optimally. The players didn't really complement each other, but the actual quality of players themselves in the roster are actually very strong. And they have good social media, you know, they get the fans out. So I'm kind of disappointed that they weren't, that if they get relegated, because, in my opinion, Sora is I mean, obviously, I can't say they're less deserving because, you know, they've played better throughout the season. But Sora kind of seems to actively avoid big names. They have a pretty cheap roster. I've never seen anything, you know, on the internet from them. So I would have liked to see Siena stay. We'll see. It's not over yet. But it's if Siena doesn't start turning around very quickly, it could be over in the next few weeks. The last game that took place today on Monday and just finished pretty recently is Verona taking care of Trentino in the tiebreak set at home at the AGSM Forum. And this was a pretty, you know, unexpected result. Verona, despite, you know, they're usually just outside the big four. They usually have some pretty strong players. They haven't had, like, the best season, though. Thomas Jaski was supposed to be on the roster, got injured during the Nations League, wasn't able to participate. Marteza Sharifi so started for them in the P2 spot beside Manavi, and he was okay at points, but clearly was overmatched in the Italian Super League. But then they brought in Matej Kaczynski, and he has been, obviously he's a living legend in volleyball, but he has just brought another angle to their offense that they didn't have before, and he's just been spectacular for them. And I think that was really shown in this game. He hit 21 for 40, got blocked four times, and made three errors. But everyone was making errors in this game, so not a huge deal. But yeah, he's passing well, got an ace. 21 kills, I mean, great game for him. Great game for Manavi, 15 for 27, so had that efficiency that Kaczynski was lacking. And they're actually passing really well. 26% for Manavi, 32% for Kaczynski, and 35% for Daniel DePandy. Passing has been an issue for Verona this season, so if they can figure that out, they're going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs. In sixth place right now, they would be matching up with Lube Civitanova. So that'd be another great first-round series. I think Milano and Verona, whoever gets matched up with them, is going to give those third and fourth place teams a run for their money. A bit of a concerning game on the other side of the net for Trentino. Luca Vittori has actually looked pretty good for large parts of the season. He kind of went back to his old self today. This is a pretty abominable stat line. 8 for 24 hitting, got blocked five times, made three errors. So I don't have the efficiency right in front of me, but I believe that is a 0% hitting efficiency with eight kills and eight errors. So not a good night for him. And then Aaron Russell also had a bit of a rough game. Not as bad as Vittori. But, you know, those two usually, at least one of them has a good game. But they couldn't get it going today. Vittori looked a bit rough. Wasn't connecting well with Gianelli. This is the Vittori that we knew last season. So hopefully this is not a sign of things to come. We kind of thought he had it figured out. But this is definitely a return to last year's form for Vittori. And another interesting thing is that despite struggling so much, he wasn't subbed out until the last set for Gabriele Nelli, who, in my opinion, should be starting over Vittori anyway. I think he's a better player, regardless of whether Vittori's playing well or not. So I know Lorenzetti is putting a lot of trust in Vittori, and he's like, okay, I can't sub him off if he's playing badly because then he's going to lose confidence. And for Vittori, he's kind of like a quieter, sensitive guy, so that confidence is really easy to lose in a big part of his game. But come on, if you're hitting 0% efficiency in the Italian Super League and you have the backup for the Italian national team opposite on your bench, I think the leash should be a bit shorter. I think Nelli should get more of a look. We'll see what they decide to go with in their next match. Ravenna beat Latina in a five-set match that didn't really matter too much considering both teams are outside the playoff race right now. Although Ravenna is close, but I think this is a little too late with them at 25 points, Mons at 30. And, you know, they still have a shot, but as I'm going to say, Mons have beat Sora 3-0, giving them a full 3 points, which just increases their chances a lot. So for Monza, Oleg Plotnicki is back in action. MVP of the match, looked really good, you know, look really, really good. I think he's going to be such a good player in the future for Ukraine and for Mons. I hope they're able to keep him in Zavaronik because that's such a fun young core to watch every game. Makes all the Monza games exciting. Monza's first 3-0 win of the season, good for them. And at a really important point in the season to kind of solidify their playoff chances. But now it's not just about solidifying your playoff chances, because right now they're matched up with Perugia in the first round. And if you've been following the Super League this season, you know, Perugia is definitely probably the team to avoid out of any. I mean, there's no playoff team in the top four that you want to play, but definitely Perugia is one I would most want to avoid. Padova takes care of Valencia 3-0 in a complete blowout. You know, good. Valencia's actually been a decent team this season, so I didn't expect it to be this lopsided, but good on them. Perugia beats Grote 3-0 in a result that absolutely no one is surprised by. Wilfredo Leon got to rest this game, and Nick Hogue played instead of him. It's always nice when you get to rest players. It doesn't really happen in the Italian Super League that much, because they do only play once a week for the most part, and they're under a lot of pressure to win. So it's nice to see, you know, resting someone actually pay off. And I mean, it helps when you have Nick Hoke, who's like an elite level outside hitter himself, come in as your replacement. Good for Perugia. Grote, I have nothing to say anymore about them. All right, so that's the Italian League wrapped up for the week. A couple exciting playoff races still to take care of, or still to look forward to, the relegation race between Siena and Sora. So just always an exciting league to follow. All right, so we spent a decent amount of time on that, so probably just go over the other big leagues quickly. Not a ton happening this week. Let's go over the Plus Liga just very quickly. Just a bit of news. Lincoln Williams left the sinking Bedzin, who is pretty much guaranteed. No, I think 100% guaranteed to get relegated to the second Polish league. And he's going, I'm not really sure, Jagra Smolter. Yeah, I'm not even going to say that last one. He's going to a bad team in Russia, basically. I believe the team he's going to has 7 points in the standings. Second from the bottom. The last place team has 4. So I guess he's just there to, you know, maybe they had a bit of extra cash to spend and they wanted to just try and avoid, make sure they don't get relegated from that last spot. So, I mean, smart move, might as well. Lincoln Williams, I'm sure, is a big upgrade over whoever they had previously. Lincoln Williams gets to get out of a disastrous situation in Bedzin and stop losing every single game. And also, he was carrying an extremely high set load for Bedzin. He was among one of the league's top scorers, and doing it actually on pretty good efficiency. So it'll probably be nice not to have to carry his team every single night. So probably the most surprising game of this week was Resovia giving Zaxa their first loss of the season. And they did it pretty confidently too, 25-17, 25-21, 25-21. Yeah, that's right. It was a 3-set sweep. And yes, Zaxa is missing Drew right now, but that hasn't really stopped them from taking care of teams in the Plus Liga and Champions League up until this game. So interesting to see. Resovia kind of had a more interesting lineup this game. They've been kind of limited by the foreign player. They've signed way too many foreign players this season. This lineup that they played in this game was kind of cool. Kuika Shoji and David Smith, the two Americans, got the start. Tibo Rosard was in. So those were their three foreign players. So they started. So the rest of their guys were Jakub Sziraj, the opposite, Buszek, Majdanek, and Majdowski. So didn't see Damien Scholes and didn't see Matthew Mika. So a bit of a different lineup for them. We've seen a lot of lineups from them throughout the season. But Kuika Shoji, it worked well because Kuika Shoji ended up winning MVP, was really dishing the ball well, really was like spreading out the sets. Wasn't Rosard didn't score like 30 points like he does usually and has to carry the team. Kuika Shoji did a good job of making sure everyone was involved, and to their credit, everyone else was actually scoring pretty well. So well done for Resovia. I'm going to go over, after the games, I'm going to go over a quick overview of the playoff race in Poland, because it probably has the most, it's more interesting than Italy for sure. There's actually a lot left to decide about who can get into the playoffs. In terms of a playoff race, there are a couple more interesting games. Strzelci Vigil beat Gdansk 3-1. Gdansk has a lot of games still left to play. They still have 8 compared to like 6 or 5 for most. But this one hurts them for sure in their chance of getting to the playoffs. 3 points here would have been huge for them. Everyone looked good this game, but David Konarski got the MVP with 25 points. So good job for Strzelci Vigil. They're not really in danger of missing the playoffs, but they certainly made it a lot harder for their opponents, Gdansk. Katowice beat Radom 3-0. Another huge game in terms of playoff implications, because Katowice really, really gunning for that last playoff spot between Beltatov and Radom. They were at second place for a lot of the season and have been dropping pretty significantly recently. Thomas Rousseau, the young Belgian outside, was really good in that game. Rousseau is having a really good season. I think he's going to be a huge player in the future of Belgian volleyball. And, you know, Katowice has been a bit of a surprise team this year. So, and they do it with a bunch of different players every game, it seems like. So good on them for beating Radom and really helping their odds of making the playoffs. That was a huge one for them to make the playoffs, because PG Skra Beltatov, the reigning champions of the Polish Plusliga, also had a 3-1 victory over Lubin. And as we know, the skeleton crew of Beltatov, missing Mariusz Vlajly and missing Arthur Szalpuk and a couple other bench players, as well as usually missing a Badapur. He was back for this game, although he still doesn't look 100% healthy, in my opinion. So the other guys had to step up. Kochanowski, you know he's going to get a lot of sets when those guys are out, and he played really well this game. Rene Tapan has been struggling a lot. I think he's definitely overmatched as the opposite for one of the premier Polish teams, but you know, he had a good game in this one. Scored 21 points. Masahiro Yanagita is out right now, so Igor Grobelny and Luke Smith, the Australian, were getting the start at outside. But definitely the best player was Zabrowski, who was on that Polish team that with Bartosz Kwolek and Kochanowski and those guys. That was, you know, that youth championship team that killed everyone. But he hasn't quite had as much success in them from the professional level, but I think that's going to start to turn around pretty soon. So Kochanowski was the MVP for this match. And as for the playoff race, pretty much five of the spots are already confirmed, with Zaxa, Warszawa, Jastrzębski Węgiel, Radom, and Zawrócie. I mean, they're not guaranteed, especially Zawrócie is only at 30 points, but I kind of doubt any of those teams are going to fall out of the playoff race, especially with the way Zawrócie has been playing recently. So then that leaves one playoff spot between four teams. Beltatov is probably the favorite right now. They're at 27 points. Katowice is also at 27 points, but it's played one more game. Beltatov has 6 games left, and Katowice has 5 games left. It's a pretty big difference. Rysovia is at 23 points with 6 games left. I mean, they still have a shot at it, which is pretty crazy to think about, because they started on like an 8-game losing streak to start the season. But, you know, they're down 4 points, 6 games left. They could get it, but unlikely. And then Gdansk, even though they have the most games left to play at 8, they're only at 20 points, and in my opinion, have the weakest roster out of any of those teams. But anyway, the battle for that 6th spot is going to be really interesting. It'd be a big scandal in Poland if Skra misses the playoffs, because they're such a popular team. Probably the biggest, either them or Zaxa is definitely the biggest name in Polish club volleyball. They have a ton of fans, a ton of high expectations, a very expensive roster. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to hold on to that last playoff spot. In Russia, Dynamo Moscow beat Belgorod in a match. It was just kind of a stoppable force meets a movable object. Moscow only hit 47%. Belgorod only hit 35%, including a pretty brutal 13-for-36 game from Canadian outside hitter Gord Perrin, making 2 errors and getting blocked 6 times. Definitely not the best stat line of all time. Gutsalik only getting 4-for-13, and Petrik hitting 10-for-29, getting blocked 4 times and 3 errors. Belgorod had a great start to the season, and I think the roster is still actually quite strong on paper, but I don't know if Porsche is the best setter to have. Their middles are not quite as strong as some of the other Russian teams. And in my opinion, Denis Semchenok is not, like, I mean, the level of opposites in Russia is just absolutely crazy. So Semchenok is not quite there. I think next year, Belgorod, I like lots of their roster, especially they have 2 really good liberos, but they should look to shore up that position. I know there's a lot of good Russian opposites that they would probably love to have play there. For example, Pavel Kruglov, currently sitting on the bench of Moscow, I think would be a great player on Belgorod next year. Zenit St. Petersburg beat Fekel Nove Urengoy 3-1. Good bounce back for them after they barely beat Chaumont in the Champions League last week. In all honesty, Chaumont might have got robbed there. There was maybe a net touch on that last point. A couple questionable reviews at the end. Anyway, not too questionable. I don't think it was a huge deal, but they were very close to losing there. So good bounce back game. Kameo had a really good game, hitting 21 for 28, only making two errors. And he also got three blocks in this one. And the usual unstoppable combo of Dmitry Volkov and Igor Kliuka did not really get it done. Kliuka, 7 for 18, 5 errors. And Dmitry Volkov, 17 for 37 with 8 errors. So Volkov, we see, I mean, he's usually a fantastic player, one of the best outsides in the world. But we saw in this one, wasn't really able to get past Yor Grozier and Sergei Antipkin. You know, we've seen these games for him before, so I'm sure Fekel will bounce back. They're having a really great season. Overall, they are in fourth place right now at 43 points. Zenit St. Petersburg, after that win, is at 44 points. Kemerovo, you know, I know they surprised everyone last year, but I'm surprised they're comfortably in second place at 48 points. Zenit Kazan seems to be doing okay, even though they, you know, they're now not perfect. They're only 19-1 now instead of 20-0. So they'll be fine. Novosibirsk is at 41. Haven't really had a huge chance to watch a lot of them this year. They are not participating in any CEV competitions. And then Dynamo Moscow. So that was a good win for them to get them 30 points. And then Ural Ufa wrapping up that last playoff spot with 22. That's going to be a good race in Russia as well. There's four teams within 5 points competing for that last playoff spot in Russia. I mean, the last playoff spot in Russia, you're playing Zenit Kazan, so it's not exactly a huge accomplishment anyway. But, you know, it's always nice to make the playoffs. And then lastly, in Brazil, we know Tabate's coach recently got fired after their poor performance at the Copa Libertadores, and they followed up with a not the best performance this week, where they barely beat Volley Itapetininga. Sada Cruzeiro also struggled a bit, barely beating Volley Renata. So the top teams were struggling a bit this week, and then a great game for Fiat Minas, who actually took down Rio de Janeiro 3-1. Mias has some great younger players. Kind of reminds me of like Monza and Fekel, kind of these like homegrown young players that played with their youth club that are now good enough to actually be really good in the first league. They have Maik Reyes, who played with Brazil in the World Championships this summer. I think he's going to be like the starting libero for Brazil going forward, because I know Thiago Brendel, Thales Haas, great players, but you know they haven't had that young guy really come up throughout the system. And you don't see a lot of liberos who are this good this young, but you know I really like Maik. He's absolutely incredible in defense, really good hustler. Still needs to work on his passing a bit, but he recently moved from just being a defensive libero to being a full-time passing libero, so that's exciting to see from him. And then another player who was part of Brazil's youth national team in 2017 was Felipe Roque, who's an absolute monster. I think he's like 6'10", 6'11", huge opposite. Hit 16 for 25 this game with only one error. He's going to be potentially the next Wallace replacement. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of competition. Alan Souza will probably get the look first, but Rock is definitely someone to keep an eye on. And the last guy, young guy for them, is Henrique Honorato. And then on the other side of the court this game, the current Wallace Souza. I mean, he had a weird stat line, 15 for 28. Didn't look fantastic. Was getting blocked a lot, got blocked 6 times in this game, which again we don't see that much from a player of Wallace's caliber. Trying to go cross, was getting blocked from middles a lot. Mauricio Borges, 8 for 15 hitting. Rosalind Penchev was only in the game for parts of it, didn't really do much. So Rio de Janeiro, like, amazing team, didn't really have it in this match though. So I don't know if I like what I'm seeing that much as we're coming to the end of this Brazilian season. Tabaté and Rio de Janeiro started off providing a lot of competition, but they're falling off at exactly the wrong time. And it looks like we might just be getting another Santa Cruzeiro versus Sao Paulo finals matchup. But, you know, I'm sure that'll be very exciting as well. But we've seen it before, and I thought there would be some more interesting storylines coming out of Brazil this season. But nope, Taylor Sander and Kevin LaRue are just looking incredible on Santa Cruzeiro. They're sitting at 15-2 with 42 ranking points in first place right now. But hey, that Rio de Janeiro versus Minas first round matchup could potentially be very exciting, you know, similar to some of the Milano-Modena matchup we see in the Italian league. The 4-5, always very interesting, especially when you have like big four teams like you do in the Italian and Brazilian leagues. Anyway, I think that's enough for the Monday Pro Volleyball Roundup. Hopefully that answers a few questions you guys had about what's going on in the world of volleyball. It gives you a good recap of the big four pro leagues, what went on in them. Not sure if I'll do all four leagues every week, but in a week like this week where there wasn't like a ton happening, there weren't like a ton of storylines or anything, it gives me a chance to go around and look at kind of the big matches from all the leagues. So if you like this podcast and the kind of content I do, check out 51vb.com. I have kind of more detailed recaps for the Italian and Polish leagues written by people that are actually from those countries. So give kind of a first-person perspective on stuff going on there. And then also check out my YouTube channel, 51 Volleyball, for videos I'm posting there. And if you guys have any comments or ideas or anything for the podcast, let me know. And if you want to have a question that you have that you've maybe thought about the last couple of weeks answered on the podcast by me, check out my Instagram at 51vb. And on Wednesday, I'll be putting up a story with, you know, that little box where you guys can ask questions. And then I'll pick out a few of them and answer. Well, I'll usually answer. Last time I answered most of them, but I'll try and answer them on the podcast, which should either come out Wednesday night or Thursday morning. You guys, I'll read your name out. You guys can have your question answered, and I'll try and go in depth and answer them as the best way I can. All right. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your week.